Back together again, you and I chatting it up on this Tuesday, August 19th, 2025, on Connecticut Today. I was wondering about the chances for any U.S. military involvement in a possible peacekeeping force that would be stationed on a newly established Ukraine-Russia border. CBS News reporter Torian Small in D.C. called in. He talked about Monday's White House summit regarding the Russia-Ukraine war. Maria Weingarten joined us again, Connecticut 169 Strong member, about a Connecticut Mirror story on her group's opposition to that big, bad, controversial housing bill. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio with her usual Tuesday feature, this time on more proposed state budget shenanigans. And Ansonia Mayor David Cassetti dropped by to talk about his car allegedly being vandalized earlier this month. So in case you haven't checked, apparently the Cold War is back, or maybe it never left, right? When you consider all that we're hearing right now as far as what's going on between the U.S., Ukraine, and Russia. And now the key question pops up, and that's how I'll start the show off today at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How deeply should the U.S. get into this now? What am I talking about? Well, if you've been listening all day here on WICC to our CBS News Top of the Hour updates, apparently now President Trump's saying, well, no, we're not going to have U.S. boots on the ground, U.S. men and women, armed military forces in any security guarantees for Ukraine. Okay, but now some U.S. air power may or not be, you know, involved here. So do we go there or not? Because believe it or not, it certainly looks like the Cold War is back. I mean, it sounds like, now it's not to that level, maybe it never went anywhere to begin with. But you go back to the late 1960s, early to mid-70s, the 1980s, and when the Berlin Wall finally fell here. But, you know, you're reading it right here. I'm looking at this story from AFP, Agence France-Presse, the French press agency. Trump rules out U.S. troops but eyes air power in a Ukraine deal. How about that? Well, everybody says, don't they say, hey, if we're going to end this, there got to be some Ukrainian security guarantees. Everybody talks about, well, there has to be security guarantees. Well, you think that's going to happen without the U.S.? Come on. So, again, we're walking into a scenario here. If what I'm seeing on social media is any indication, and sometimes it usually is, oh, you want this to end, but you don't want the U.S. involved. Well, it doesn't work that way. When it comes to Russia, the president said earlier today he's ruling out sending U.S. troops to the area, but envisioned extending U.S. air power as Western nations begin hashing out security guarantees for Ukraine before any potential summit with Russia. How about that? And we thought the Cold War was over. So this is what you have. This is exactly what you have. You've got kind of a new revamped Cold War 2.0. So how do you feel about U.S. involvement here, huh? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How about that? Oh, we've got to end the war. Got to help Zelensky stand up to Putin. Okay, you think the U.S. is going to be able to pull a full punches pilot there and wash our hands, absolve our hands of that and say, hey, good luck, Ukraine. There you go. Again, you're talking about Russia here. Love to know what Chris Murphy thinks about this. He hasn't said anything about this, I don't think. Dick Blumenthal, Jim Himes, have they weighed in on U.S. air power being part of this? I can see them now. Oh, Trump's crazy. He's committing U.S. air power. Well, again, if everybody's going to sit there and wag their finger at Vladimir Putin, believe me, fingers deserve to be wagged here. The guy's been butchering Ukrainians. Okay. So then what is the U.S. going to do to help here? We can't just keep sending him money. We can't keep depleting our own stockpiles of munitions and everything for our armed forces. But again, President Trump on Tuesday, today, ruling out sending U.S. troops, but envisioning an extension of U.S. air power as nations start figuring out security guarantees for Ukraine. What did I tell you months ago? On this program, I said it over and over and over again. A lot of people are going to be a little uncomfortable when the security guarantees part of this kicks in. And yeah, you have to have them. I understand that. Now, he says, the president does, said that European nations would take the lead by sending troops to secure any settlement, an idea that's been mulled by France and Britain. Oh, here comes the Cold War all over again. Trump telling Fox News, quote, when it comes to security, they are willing to put people on the ground. We're willing to help them with things, especially probably if you talk about air by air, because no one has the kind of stuff we really have. They don't. Now, he's right. So what are your thoughts here? Let's get started with this. Are we stepping into a new Cold War here? I think we are. This looks like East Berlin, West Berlin, East Germany, West Germany, Czechoslovakia, all over again. 203-333-9422. Question being, pretty simple one, I think, as we kick off with this on WICC. What are your thoughts here about possibly using U.S. military personnel in a Ukraine peacekeeping force? Yeah, they may not be on the ground, but if we're going to do air power there, that means a base gets involved? You tell me. Sure, and we're already getting a lot of responses on this question. I put it up earlier. What are your thoughts here? Should any U.S. military personnel be used in a Ukraine peacekeeping force? Yes or no? Why or why not? Maybe just air power? Maybe we should have boots on the ground. What do you think? I don't think we should have boots on the ground, but can it really be pulled off without us? And do you trust our European allies to commit to what they say they will? Maybe, according to what Mr. Trump is saying. So what do you think? U.S. military personnel in any way on the ground or in the air to help keep the peace in Ukraine? Maybe to keep Russia from advancing into other parts of Europe? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC as we continue. All right, so here you are. Here's the scenario. It's a nice word. It makes me sound smart, doesn't it? Let me lay out the scenario for you. At 20 past 2, great to have you with us, 333-9422. Now, months ago when everybody was saying, oh, we got to get Putin to stop, and I kept saying, the guy's a murderous thug. He's not going to stop until he gets something. Or he gets a situation, or he gets land. Okay, so we've established that now. And everybody kind of knew it, and they said, well, there has to be security guarantees for Ukraine, which I agree with, because Ukraine's never beating Russia. They're just not. I have numerous Ukraine friends. I went to friends of mine in grammar school were from Ukraine. My son's mom and my son have friends over there. But as gallantly as Ukraine has fought, you're not fighting Bolivia. You're not fighting Chile, with all due respect to those nations. You're not fighting Belarus. You're fighting Russia. So whether you like it or not, Putin's going to want some land. You're going to have to give it to him. And you're going to have to bulk up there with some sort of security force. And months ago, I was saying, oh, security guarantees. And already people are saying, oh, you can't have American troops there. And it sounds like Trump agrees with that. But he may say, hey, we'll commit some air power over there. And there are people going, oh, he's going to commit air power. Okay, we can't have that either. Well, you're going to have with something with United States of America written on it somewhere. Because if you don't commit the USA to something, I don't know what that is. I'm not a military strategist. I never had bars or stars on my chest, my hat, or my shoulder pads in my dress uniform. I never did that. A lot of you people did out there. If you're veterans, thank you. 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Love to hear your thoughts on this. But, you know, we're talking here again about a U.S. commitment to some sort of security consideration for Ukraine. Well, what's that going to be? You okay with that? I'll tell you, if some of the early answers on my Facebook question of the day are as I predicted, I don't think people want that, but you're going to need something, right? Maybe people will live with just air power because you don't have to have those U.S. men and women, those U.S. Airplanes and bombers and whatever, right on the border with Ukraine and Russia. But you don't think they'll be in the line of sight, in the targeting zone of Russian missiles here? Welcome back to the Cold War once again. Cold War 2.0. And silly me, when I visited the Berlin Wall site back in, when was that, 2006, I said to myself, geez, it's a good thing this will never happen again. Well, maybe it is. Maybe it is. Henry takes us down to news at 2:23. Henry, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hi, just a quickie. Just give me a minute. Yep. And this is just a, not an opinion.
Yep.
Just, you were there. Listeners were there.
Yep.
There was a Vietnam War, wasn't there?
Well, I wasn't there, but I remember it.
No, no, but you remember people talking about it in the school books now.
Yep.
The I had to dodge it.
Okay.
As I'm 75, but a lot of friends and relatives and what was the theme? What was the theme year after year after year? We have to what?
Stop communism.
The spread
of communism.
The spread of communism.
That's right.
Again, now, not my opinion. Our number one economic partner, whether you like it or not, is a communist country.
China, yes.
Right or wrong.
Yeah.
Okay, so our generation gave their all to stop the spread of communism. Where is it now, 65 years later? Communism gone?
No.
All right. No, now the poor kid that joined got his legs blown off to stop the spread of communism. And then what happened a few years later? We went into Afghanistan to stop terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
20 years over there.
Yep.
Who's in charge of Taliban? The Taliban is in charge today, are they not?
Sure.
The Taliban, so all those people now, 20 years of young kids giving their all, and it's right back to where it was.
So, Henry, in the interest of time,
can't have
you know, I know that. In the interest of time,
I'm
running up to the news here. So what do we do with this thing? Do we commit U.S. troops? Do we just use air power? What do we do?
Well, no, I'm just saying the facts about you. You wanted my opinion about why kids should join and go fight now against to stop Russia from all this other stuff. And you know what else? I get a call at least once a week, and listeners do too. You're going to say you get calls too.
Yeah.
To support disabled veterans from Vietnam and Afghanistan. Did they tell these kids when they join, come on, join, stop communism, stop Taliban?
Maybe they did.
But if you get your legs blown off, we're going to call up Henry.
Well,
we're going to call Henry to buy the wheelchair.
Yeah.
What are we looking at here? You need to stick up for the people. It's a country of the people, and the people are just
so what do we do with Russia? So what do we do with Russia?
Well, first of all, you got to look back on history
and
don't believe that you're stopping anything good. You're just doing whatever the money's telling you to do because that's what happened to Vietnam and that's what happened in Afghanistan.
So do you
These
want America?
Kids,
so,
why would you join and get your legs blown off for nothing?
Well, because a lot of them want to join, Henry. I don't know what to tell you. Listen, thanks. Traffic and weather together right here on WICC. All right, let's check in. Let's go to D.C. CBS News correspondent Torian Small with us and a flurry of activity there. Torian, good afternoon. Great to have you for a couple of minutes here. I would imagine things are changing minute by minute. And Torian, am I correct to say one of the things that's most interesting today is the notion of what possible involvement U.S. forces might have in any peacekeeping deal there? What's up with that?
Yeah, so the president and the White House, since that meeting with Zelensky and those European leaders, have clarified that any security guarantees that the U.S. will help with in forcing a solution to this Russia-Ukraine conflict would not involve boots on the ground. So no U.S. troops would be involved. That's according to the president. But he is willing to work with European leaders to help coordinate any type of facilitation of what those security guarantees would be. Now, the NATO Secretary General was here yesterday, and he said that there are about 30 countries in discussion to help him with those guarantees. So maybe troops will come from that area. And the president himself said that European leaders would have to front load any type of guarantee there. But it appears that the supervision will come from and maybe the advisement will come from the U.S. But again, no troops would be involved.
Torian, is there, and I know maybe a lot of people didn't want to come on the record with you folks here, maybe some talk, is there a notion or an attitude or a buzz there that this may, all of this might actually fall into place to work, or are there a lot of people you may be hearing on the side that, again, don't want to go on the record that may be saying, well, yeah, in theory this would work, but it's all up to whether Putin will take this or not. Are the administration officials really that enthusiastic about this or not?
Yeah, look, the administration is strongly behind the president's move so far and saying that they believe these are important steps to make in order to ensure it. The president himself said, although it was caught off camera and this is a hot mic moment, said that he believes Putin will get this done for him. So he's really talking up his confidence in his relationship that he has with the Russian leader. The concern that we're seeing, especially from European leaders, is the seriousness of Putin to accept a deal. And considering based on reporting leading up to this, it sounds like Putin wants beyond just land swap, but a guarantee that there wouldn't be the pseudo NATO membership for Ukraine. Because, again, what we're talking about here at these security guarantees would pretty much mirror NATO Article 5 power. So if one country is attacked under Article 5, that means all countries as part of NATO is attacked and they would respond accordingly. That is something that Putin does not want, which is why he pushed against Ukraine joining NATO. But ultimately, the president and President Trump is demanding, before he gets involved in the next step, for Zelensky and Putin to sit down one-on-one to discuss and hash out what exactly one party will gain, one will give, before he joins to ultimately sign a peace deal.
Hey, Torian, finally, I'm an old guy. I remember the fall of the Berlin Wall and at the height of, the Cold War here. Anybody there that you may have talked to or maybe you can seek out? Are there any worries that this is kind of like, I don't know, Cold War 2.0 here with a defined military line here or not? Anybody come to you with that or not?
Well, I think it's curious that we're having the discussion without having the discussion about territory here. And again, the president is pretty much pulling back. He's saying that any conversation about land swap has to happen between Zelensky and Putin, even though, as we know from our reporting, Putin did directly tell Trump that he wants the Donbass region. But ultimately, what these European leaders said came of this conversation at the White House on Monday was strictly based on security guarantees, no conversation about a land swap or a territory. That's something that happened later. The problem, though, that remains is whether or not Putin will take this seriously, especially alone with Zelensky, as Russia continues to attack Ukraine to this day.
Torian Small, CBS News. Torian, thank you. Great stuff as usual. We appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Appreciate it. Torian Small, CBS News right there in D.C. I guess he's right at the White House. All right. Coming up maybe, I think next month is when it's supposed to happen, a special session here. It sends tingles up and down your back, doesn't it? Of the Connecticut General Assembly, the governor, of course, vetoing HB 5002, that controversial housing bill that would have wrestled at least some local control away from cities and towns as to what types of housing get built, including the ubiquitous phrase affordable housing. Well, good job, great job here by the folks at the Connecticut Mirror. And they went ahead and they got a look at a whole bunch of emails as to the internal debate here between the governor, his wife, the first lady of the state, his staff members, and some others saying, hey, just sign the bill. And the governor saying, well, you know, I'm going to veto it because we had a lot of blowback there. And somebody, a group rather, mentioned prominently in some of these emails and text messages, CT169 strong. And this woman's been on the radio station several times. One of our friends, Maria Weingarten, mentioned in these. And we're more of a celebrity now, Maria, than before the Connecticut Mirror.
It is very odd.
Really? Have you had people say, hey, I read the story? Has that happened?
Well, just people I know who've mentioned it, who picked up on what was happening. But, you know, it was surprising to me, quite frankly.
Really? So, how did it surprise you? How were you surprised with this?
Well, I guess, you know, the amount of, you know, iteration back and forth about it and the want for talking points and, you know, all we've been saying all along is read the bill and act based on what's in the bill. And it just seems like for the longest time, nobody really took the time to do that. And so that's, I think, our frustration is just, you know, if people actually read the bill, you know, they may not say things that we're misrepresenting things when we just refer to language and pages and studies and we run the numbers. So, you know, it's frustrating, I think.
Yeah, in fact, I'm looking at a quote right here, Maria. I guess it's from the governor. Yeah, quote, I'm trying to figure out how best to respond to these gross misrepresentations before it's too late. So you're just saying you want people to read the bill and whatever happens in September, but they continue to say, they being the governor and some legislators and staff members, continue to say, well, you know, CT 169 strong is misrepresenting what's going on here. Yes or no? How does that make you feel?
Well, again, frustrated because we literally read the bill, we analyze it, and we let people know what's in the bill. So am I surprised that, you know, I think we were surprised by the amount of support and the amount of people who actually took it seriously and did get in touch with the governor. So, I mean, there were thousands of emails. It's understated in what she said in the article because we know that there were, you know, almost, I'd say well over 5,000 emails sent, well over. And so it's surprising that, you know, it was just residents who, you know, were serious about this. And they said, these are not what, these bills are not representing what we want. We don't feel that this was a good process. And so they took the initiative to get in touch with the governor. And so to me, the article is sort of meant to marginalize those voices who, you know, were part of this democratic process. And the process includes the ability for a governor to put a veto in if you know, he hears from the constituents that are supposed to be represented. And they're saying, we don't agree with what's going on right now. And so he did. He vetoed the bill because he recognized that, or he heard from constituents who said, you know, there are issues in this bill.
Yeah, and Maria Weingarten is the guest, oftentimes a great guest on this radio station here. We usually have her or Alexis Harrison on from CT 169 Strong. And that's what I was saying during this whole thing, Maria, when we were in the teeth of this. My God, how dare the people, Maria, how dare the simpletons, that's what they would say, not me, how dare they not agree with something we do here at the Great Cathedral in Hartford? It's almost like they, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, but it's almost like they were offended. The thousands of people said, like, we don't want this. How dare they, Maria, right?
Yeah, and that's really what I think everybody should really take away from this, is that this is the democratic process working correctly. This is residents who were not informed by their legislators. I mean, why have we gotten the traction we've gotten? It's because we actually tell people what is in the language of the bill. which is what the proponents of the bill and those who voted for the bill are not telling their
yes.
constituents. And that's the difference.
And that, Maria, I have always said, whether it's this bill, and I said it a lot about this bill, about a crime bill, about a tax bill, any bill, you never, Maria, and maybe never is a strong word, but I'm going to use it, we hardly ever see representatives maybe using video or YouTube or saying, okay, let's break down what's in this bill. Now, this side said this, but here's what the bill actually said, which means they're either lazy, they don't want to do it, or they can't lie about it. Because I'm saying to myself, why doesn't anybody ever actually break down the language in these things? Maybe, Maria, I don't know, because one, they don't want to, and two, if they do, it's too confusing.
I would agree. And you know, quite frankly, the way the bill was run, you know, behind closed mm-hmm. doors, just with the majority, and they brought out, you know, a part of the bill on the Tuesday of, right, I'm sorry, the Thursday right before Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
It got pulled because even their own party was not on board. Mm-hmm. Then they went back to closed doors, and I guess they negotiated some other things. And then they dropped a addendum to the existing 80-something page bill, another, I don't know how many it was, 20-some more pages. And that was dropped on Memorial Day at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And then they called the bill the next day. You're telling me that every legislator who voted in favor of that bill read the bill? And even more so, I think the fact that it referred to a study that was supposed to go and have and be in a meeting, like, so the way the bill originally read was have a study on fair share, mm-hmm. bring it back to the Housing and Planning Development Committee, and then have it voted on by everyone in the assembly. That never happened. That information in the study only came out the week before Memorial Day. Nobody's read this study. I guarantee it. Nobody. So that's why you have allocations that are errors, because they're over allocating to 26 municipalities, an allocation that's over 20% of their housing stock. These are onerous numbers. Mm. That's what they put in the bill.
Do we finally, Maria, do we have any idea of what may be happening now in this special session that's supposed to come up in a couple of weeks? Are they going to reintroduce this bill? Is it going to be a new bill? Is this again being done behind closed doors? Have you heard anything?
I have not heard anything. I have not heard what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. We don't know if or when. We know that they are having discussions among members of the majority party. They've even started to ice some of their majority members who were in opposition so that they don't even know what's in there.
Wow.
And so and that doesn't even speak about the fact that, you know, I've talked to two of the rankings on those committees, or I've gotten in touch with some people who checked for me
yeah.
and verified that they've not been reached out to at all.
No.
So no one knows what's happening except for the majority leadership, mm-hmm. and it's just more of the same. It's more games that they're playing. It's more, you know, obstruction and lack of clarity. And again, this is why we got to a veto, is because there were things dropped in the bill, things that maybe the governor didn't even know about. You know, maybe he had agreed to things, and then there were things that were then renegotiated in those last few days
mm-hmm.
that the governor wasn't even aware of.
Jeez.
Because he seemed to be under the impression that things were all just opt-ins and all this other things. And so when we heard what he was saying, you know, it made us think that he maybe has not been read in on what's actually in the bill. So, you know, this is a problem, and I hope that there is a better path forward, and it's one that involves CCM. We stand with CINIC Council of Municipalities. We mm-hmm. stand with COST. We stand with a ton of bipartisan municipal leaders who all got in touch with the governor, as well as zoners, local zoning experts, who all got in touch with the governor and said, this is not good legislation. And not so it's not just those petitions that went up to Hartford. It's all of these other people who all said that this is not good policy.
Mm.
And so I think it's important that we, you know, that he listens and that everybody does a very good, diligent job, because this is really important stuff, and we should not be messing around and playing games with it.
Maria Weingarten, CT 169 Strong. Maria, thank you, and we'll be watching this come next month. Thanks, Maria. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Bye.
All right, there you go, Maria Weingarten. Well, were there changes made in the bill that the governor didn't know about? Yikes. Megan Portfolio is here. She's stopping by. Megan, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm actually going to be watching CTN tomorrow. It's
really?
It's been in my calendar since last week.
Wait a minute. You watch CTN? Is that what you're when do you not watch? When do you not watch CTN?
Oh, I was watching it today.
Of course. You know, in radio, we used to have these things called loyal listener clubs, and you get a card, and you could get like 5% off of the donut shop. You should be the inaugural CTN loyal viewer. You should be in the CTN Viewers Hall of Fame. That's what
for reals, I should be. But just so that your listeners know that Chris Murphy won, it's at 6 p.m., and that's also on CTN.
Okay, good.
Also been in my calendar.
Good. Now, at least
so if they don't want to watch, I will be.
Okay, well, thank you. Well, at least the Murphy one is a little convenient, 6 o'clock, not like what, Matt, 10 a.m. in the morning. Come on.
I know.
Well, we had it. It was 10 a.m., but we had the roundtable. Ah, so how are you? I see you've alerted us again this week in your Hartford Portfolio blog about some more possible budget chicanery. What is going on here? What do you have?
Oh, it's one of like their favorite hobbies I'm seeing in our state government, and we like to create these little off budget accounts.
Yeah,
so that we can funnel money into it, so it doesn't count towards the guardrails.
Okay.
So let me tell the boring part of my story first.
Okay.
So this is so boring, and I'll try to like make it snappy.
Okay.
So we have a rainy day fund.
Yeah.
And the way that works is it's capped at 18% of the net general fund appropriations.
Okay.
And once that ceiling is hit, the extra surplus goes to paying down our unfunded liabilities.
Okay.
That includes like roughly $35 billion in unfunded pension obligations, and then another, I'm going to say, $17 billion in unfunded retiree health care benefits.
Okay.
So when we don't pay these unfunded liabilities, we pay interest.
Yeah.
And that means we will, like, never pay it off. So what the progressives want to do, and one of the groups leading the charge, is this Connecticut project, which I wrote about.
Mm-hmm.
They have a huge war chest, millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And they actually want to take this surplus, which I think at year end was about $1.95 billion with a B. So that $1.95 billion is supposed to be headed to pay down our state employee and our teacher retirement fund.
Okay.
They want to take the money instead and put it in this weird account that was created last session. It's called a healthcare safeguard account.
Okay.
So they created this account. It was in one of the big omnibus bills. It was a Senate Democrat priority.
Yeah.
And when they were debating it, Heather Summers, Senator Summers, and Senator Gordon were both like, what is this account? There's no fiscal note on it. There's no oversight. It's essentially like authorizes the Department of Public Health to spend money that's in this fund for it's a quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes right now, unexpected shortfalls.
Ah.
So this would be run by unelected bureaucrats. So what this Connecticut project wants to do is take the money that we're supposed to be using to pay bills and put it in this account and use it for things like basically being an ATM for any federal program that's cut or
Husky. Yes.
No, this is bad. This should not happen, because we take that money. I don't even know if it's – I'd have to talk to a lawyer about this.
Mm-hmm.
I do not have a lawyer, and I don't play one on TV.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we have these fiscal guardrails, and the fiscal guardrails clearly state that when we have this rainy day fund, anything over has to be used to pay down debt.
Mm-hmm.
This is not debt. This is – these. They want to put this money in this account, but – If we're going to be covering any SNAP deductions that we get from the feds or any Husky or Medicaid cuts that we get from the feds, that's an ongoing program. So you can't just rely on like windfall revenue that you get from taxes because the stock market was a good year and assume the stock market is always going to be having a good year, because eventually it's not going to be good, and that money isn't going to be coming in. But now we've set ourselves up for failure because now we've got these ongoing programs. Because you can't, if you have people relying on these benefits, these entitlements, you can't just come in and cut them off. You're going to have people starving to death. Like, you just... It's actually kind of cruel the way they want to do this, because the only other option would be then to raise the rest of our taxes. So this is it's a lose-lose all around.
And Megan, did I read the other day that all the fretting about some of these federal cuts, which may very well happen to some degree or another, we don't really know those numbers yet, right? Am I wrong here? Because I'm seeing all these things about, well, we face up to this or maybe that. But did I see where somebody said, wait a minute, we don't know these exact numbers? Or am I wrong here?
No, and the point is, I feel like I'm being gaslit by the world because we don't know the numbers. I mean, there are talks. I mean, I do predict there will be some cuts coming. Yeah. And I think it's going to be based. I know... at the federal level, they're very big into like eliminating all the fraud and abuse to these systems, which we should all be like screaming like, yes, please. I mean, let's root out all the corruption in these programs. So the money does get to the people that really need it. But I think they want to base the cuts on how we handle fraud and abuse. Yeah. So it's on us to make sure the money is getting to where it needs to go and not being wasted and stolen. But the cuts would be spread out through many, many years. So they're not going to come in and say Connecticut.
Yeah.
And now, of course, I'm predicting this. This is, I don't know this for a fact, but I don't see the federal government coming in and saying, all right, Connecticut, we're just going to slash billions and billions of dollars of money coming to your state.
No, because
they're not going to. It's just, it's not realistic. And this is the government, mind you, no matter what party you belong to. Government is government and not efficient.
And they want to get reelected, a lot of them. And also, did I not read, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, but did I not read that some of these supposed cuts are spaced out over like 10-year cycles?
Yes.
And they're cuts to increases. We hear about that, too. People think it's zero-based budgeting, which I was reading it's not.
I think you're right, but I'm not. I don't want to put my name on the line.
No.
I have a hard enough time keeping up with the knuckleheads in our state.
I get it. All right. Finally, before I let you go, we were talking some housing stuff and had Maria Weingarten on a little while ago from CT169.
Maria's great.
Yeah. And her name was all over that Connecticut Mirror. And by the way, kudos to the Mirror for going through, what they say, 14,000 pages.
I was like, oh, my goodness. I said the same thing. I'm like, way to go, Mirror.
Yeah. And so what do you, I don't know whether you're hearing anything or what do you think's going to come out of this special session, which I guess is supposed to be sometime starting in the next few weeks. And
Is this going to be cloak and dagger on
this stuff again?
Yeah, I think we're going to have some information from what I'm hearing from people that have been, you know, sharing what they've been hearing up in Hartford. I think we're going to have some information tomorrow at the round table.
Oh, really?
The majority leaders round table meeting. Yeah. So we may have a better idea on what they're planning on doing. And keep in mind, this is a part-time legislature. So these guys aren't there right now, you know, coming up with legislation. I know they are working, you know, for the state, but I mean, they're not full-time working like they do during session.
No.
There's no way a new bill is going to come out. So, I mean, what are they going to do? Put out the same bill that Governor Lamont has already said he's going to veto? I mean, does that make any sense? It costs money to bring these people in.
Yeah, it does.
It costs us, like the taxpayers. Every time they get called on a special session, there's a fiscal note on that.
Yeah.
So you, what are you going to have all the, make us pay for everyone to come in, and you're not, you don't even have your ducks in a row? And you know what? The majority leader, he's a smart guy. He's a very smart guy. He's not going to do anything stupid like that. So the last thing I heard, it's just a rumor. I heard it from someone last night. It may be possibly October now. But again, I think we're going to have more information tomorrow. Yeah.
October?
I hope it's never. I hope it's, let's just wait till next year.
So they may not be ready to do something in September?
No, I don't think they are. There's no possible way, unless they're going to regurgitate the same bill that everyone's freaking out over on both sides of the aisle. And it's not just Fairfield County. I know that a lot of people think it's only Fairfield County complaining, but no, A lot of the small towns in Eastern Connecticut are very upset and very worried and concerned with how are we going to do this.
Yeah. How's the dog?
Oh, he's good. He's it took him a little bit to decompress. He had another trip to Boston. He's a very well-traveled foster dog.
Yeah.
But he was a good boy up there, but it was a lot of car stuff for him. So it took him a few days to get acclimated to the suburbs again.
All right. Megan Portfolio, the Hartford Portfolio blog of the Yankee Institute. Megan, thank you, and we'll be in touch. Thanks.
Okay. Have a good
week. Bye. There you go. All right. As I tell you when I always talk about crime here, I know crime. I've had a family member killed. I've had family members mugged. We had our family business broken into, our house broken into. I've had a car stolen and a car vandalized. And I got to tell you something. When somebody does something to your stuff, like your car, you just say, what are you doing here? And it also happens to apparently elected officials here, according to a story here that I'm looking at in the Valley Independent Sentinel, where the tires slashed on a vehicle owned by the mayor of Ansonia. Mayor David Cassetti is here to talk about that. Mayor, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How you doing? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. 5x5, Mayor. Hope all is well. So what happened here? Tell people about I see this story out there.
Last Friday, the 8th, I believe it was, I was up in Naugatuck.
Yeah.
I was meeting with some people from the Council of Governments. But prior to that, I was with my boxing coach. I run a boxing program up at the Naugatuck YMCA, and I was with some of the coaches.
Yeah.
And then I left, and I went home. I got home about 10:15. I parked in my driveway, and I went to bed, but I get up early. I'm an early riser. I only need like 4 hours sleep.
Okay.
And I come down my office, and then I notice as I'm driving down the highway, I hear a rumbling. I said, what the hell is that? So I pull into the Walthall Park area, and I call. I look, and it was, I said, I got a flat tire. I said, how the hell that happened? So I called Frank's service station. He came out and changed the tire.
Okay.
And he says, it looks like somebody slit your tire, Mayor.
Oh.
I said, really? I said, so I didn't think nothing of it. That was only one tire. So he fixed it. I drove to my office. I did my paperwork.
Yeah.
About 11:30, a friend of mine called me. He said, Mayor, you got a flat tire. I said, yeah, I know. I had a flat tire. He said, no, your other side. I go out and look. Somebody had slashed both of them.
Wow.
They probably didn't go deep enough, so they were slow leaks. They were slow leaks.
Yeah.
And I had it fixed by what you call it. It's a city vehicle. You know, the residents give every mayor a city vehicle.
Sure.
And I had new tires put on. I got a good price from Isaac's Tire in Derby in Ansonia.
Yeah.
And I fixed them, but you know, I reported it to the police. I said, I just want to let you know that I got. So they made a police report.
Yeah.
That becomes public information.
Yeah.
And then I guess, my opponents and the news got a hold of it, and they're trying to make a thing about it. So I don't know.
Well,
they're asking me questions on where I was. I said, what does that matter? But regardless,
So listen, Mayor, let me, and you know, we don't want to mention any names or allusions here, but could it be just some crank, or is there a political thing going on here? Anything about that?
It's very suspect. It's very suspect. I have to tell you.
Yeah.
It's the silly season. All right. It's the silly season now with the election.
Yeah.
And I know that my opponents want me completely out because I'm a strong force for good.
Okay.
And they hate that because they want to be able to be in charge, but they'll go at any extreme to do anything and say anything and accuse me of anything. They don't care, but I don't know. It may be a pattern. That's all I'm saying. We'll see what happens in the coming months.
All right. Mayor David Cassetti of Ansonia. Mayor, always good to have you on. Stay in touch. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. There you go. All right. So the mayor, that's the worst too. When you're driving along and you start to feel like, wait a minute, that sounds now, I have the tire pressure system, and all cars do, I guess, to some extent or another. And when my monitor goes off on my tires, I get a very loud, piercing kind of, like I can't even duplicate it here. So were the tires on Mayor Cassetti's car? Well, you would have to say they were slashed. What are the odds you're going to have two flat tires within a few hours? So that's not the question. Who did it? Who done it? We're not accusing anybody of slashing his hours, but like the mayor said, could be the silly season. We don't know. So good thing that the great mayor of Ansonia, David Cassetti, is safe.